Our guests today are a marvelous couple and two brilliant writers. Isabel Allende, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And her wonderful husband, Willie Gordon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let me give a little background. I think most people know you, Isabel, but you've come to Santa Fe as guest of the Landon Foundation and did a dazzling presentation. You are a world-famous author. You've sold over 51 million copies of your books. They're available in 30 languages. Your first book that was such a sensation is The House of the Spirits. There are many, many others. I won't show them all. But one that we will dwell on today, Of Love and Shadows.
That was my second novel.
Your second novel, and it has a lot to do with how you two met. You'll tell us the story in a minute. Your most recent book is this wonderful memoir called The Sum of Our Days. And we'll look at some of your other books like Aphrodite, things like that in a minute. But 20 years ago, you had the delightful pleasure of meeting Willie. And so, welcome to Santa Fe.
Excuse me, he had the delightful pleasure of meeting me.
Exactly. But perhaps it was one of those happy serendipitous where you both were lucky to meet each other.
Fate.
You are, in your professionally, you've started out as a lawyer and a community activist, which has gotten sort of fallen.
I love the term, me and Obama.
Yes, yes, yeah. And you have recently started to write. Your website says International Man of Mysteries in both senses of the word. So you've written a couple of mysteries, The Chinese Jars and The King of the Bottom.
King of the Bottom, yes.
Yes, and you're working on more. And so here we have two wonderful people who also write and maybe... but first I want you to tell me what this book, Of Love and Shadows, has to do with how you two met.
And you have to tell the story.
You've told me that there are 50 versions of the story, so you may give us any one of the 50.
Well, I'm going to tell you because she has too many stories about how this happened. On my 50th birthday, a very good friend of mine, Celia Zapata, who's a professor of Latin American literature at San Jose State, gave me this book, Of Love and Shadows, to read. And she said it was time that I got involved in Latin American literature. So I took it to Italy with me and I read it. And I wrote a postcard that I really wanted to meet this author because she talked about love the same way that I perceived it. So when I got back, I called her and I said, well, then, did you get my postcard? And she said, you liar, you never sent me a postcard. And that was the end of our conversation. And then 2 days later, she called me and she says, I got your postcard, and if you want to meet Isabel, you have to be down here in 2 days because she's going to be here. So I went, and I met Isabel, and we had dinner. And I don't know, the bell sounded, and we never really left each other after that.
Now, the magicians say it's all done with mirrors, so I'm going to have the reflection of that story from Isabel's point of view.
I was in a book tour, running around, as book tours usually are. And I never do any social life at all. I don't go out with strangers when I'm in a book tour. But that night, I had a dream. And in the dream was this man that I had met at dinner. And so when he invited me the next day for lunch, I went out with him because I had had the dream. And we hooked up. I asked him to tell me the story of his life. And I fell in love with the story and in lust with the man, who was the last heterosexual bachelor in San Francisco, and he was available. I had been divorced for three months, so I really needed a guy. So I thought, just for one night, and then here I am, 20 years later.
I think that the dreaded word commitment came up early in the relationship.
Well, because, you know, I had been married for a long time, and I thought that when you sort of fall in love with someone, it's for marriage. And I asked him immediately the next day, when he was driving me to the airport, do we have some kind of commitment? And he had to pull over. He almost fainted. What did you say?
No.
No. He said no, and I said, well, I don't have any time to waste. So I took the plane and decided to forget him. But I couldn't, so I came back without an invitation because he didn't like me that much, and he was terrified. And after a week or so, I stayed and stayed and stayed. And then I needed a green card, so I forced him into marriage. Yeah, that's true.
Now, when you told your son about this relationship, what did he say?
When I said that I had fallen in love with a guy in the tour, And he said, at your age? I was 45.
And you had gone, if I may go back to your, one of your first jobs, where you were translating romance novels from English into Spanish, and you had the chutzpah, you had the nerve to change some of the heroine's characteristics so they were more independent, and you even changed the endings somehow. And you have said that sometimes you don't believe in happy endings, but do we have a happy ending?
Well, we have a happy continuum, let's put it that way.
That's lovely. Yeah. That's
but also, it has not been easy. Yeah. We both come from very different cultures, and we've had a lot of problems. So I think that...
We're surviving. It's okay.
And you've also suffered, both of you, terrible losses early in the relationship.
You talk about that.
Yeah, we both lost our daughters, and very painful. And that's something you never really get over.
No, but it's something in many cases will separate people.
It
and
does.
In your cases...
It's probably worse if you have the child together, from what I've seen. But my daughter was involved in drugs, so I always knew that she was going to have not a happy end. So.
You know, they say that the universe conspires to help you when you are in a project like this. And it really has happened to both of us. Mm-hmm. We work at home in the same place and at the same time, but we are never in each other's faces, and we share stories, but we don't get involved in each other's books. So he just finished a third novel that a lot of people have already read. He hasn't shown it to me yet, and he hasn't read my book that I just finished.
Well, I know that your writing regime is
brutal,
formidable.
Brutal.
That you start on the magical day of January 8th. And you clear your calendar, and you hole up, and do all your research, and write, and rewrite. I mean, it really is grueling.
Mm-hmm.
Is your schedule so demanding? Is it?
No, what happens is that I carry her bags everywhere in the world that she goes, and I write when I can. I write in airports, I write in bathrooms, I write in hotel lobbies, I write. And my books have been written in every country that we've been in the world, because I write by hand, and then I put it in the computer later, and then I... So I have a totally different regime. And I'm so hyper anyway that, as Isabel says, I can only sit down for 11 minutes at a time anyway.
I've learned so much about you through your memoirs, the magnificent book, Paula, about your daughter. And then, again, I want to show this one, The Sum of Our Days, because you wrote it, the structure was sort of a letter to Paula, to
tell her what had happened with our family.
With the family.
Yeah.
And for us, the readers, it's so intimate. And you say at one point that it's not the truth that you tell that makes you vulnerable. It's the secrets that you don't tell that make you vulnerable. There are not many secrets even to be read here. It's true you gave your family members the choice to opt in or opt out, and when they opted out, you had to redo the whole thing.
Yeah.
But... how comfortable is it for your family to have their lives novelistically and brilliantly portrayed?
You know, what has happened is that, for example, my daughter-in-law, Lori, is a very private person, and she was just appalled at the idea that her life would be out there. But she accepted to be in the book, and she found out after the book was published that many people come to her, people she has never met in her life, stop her in the street, to share with her either the problems that are similar or just tell her about or ask questions. And it's always with a good intention, always with kindness. She has never had a bad encounter of any kind. And I think that that's very reassuring.
And for you, Willie, to have the infinite plan, this book about your family and your life, but not, of course, a memoir, but a fictionalized version. Did she fall in love with your story before she fell in love with you?
I don't know. That's what she says.
And then how do you... This novel is so... it's so universal. It's so all-encompassing. How are you happy with it? And is it what you would have done? You let her write it.
Well, obviously, it's her story. But emotionally, it's a very true story. I mean, the facts are changed to protect the innocent, as they say. But it's a very emotionally true story, and I'm very happy with it.
Tell us a little about the story.
If you look in my website, there's
WilliamCGordon.com,
and there's a biography of me. And basically, It's what you find if you read The Infinite Plan. My father was a wild Australian. He was a painter, a writer. He invented a religion called The Infinite Plan. And he even came through Santa Fe and through Albuquerque in the late 30s and the early 40s, and I was with him. My first trip through here was in 1940. And I remember very distinctly in Albuquerque, they sent me to a daycare center, and I crapped in my pants. And I couldn't, I didn't want to tell anybody, but they were badgering me. And I remember that, and it was snowing outside. And I denied it. But anyway, it was $1 to get in, and my father would then dress in a tuxedo with a spotlight on him, in a tent, and he would talk and talk and talk with an orange hanging from a thread on the ceiling, and then people would leave and they'd have to buy The Infinite Plan, which was $1 also. So, and for a boy, I mean, if you live in a place, you live in a little community, the world was our community. And so I had this tremendous sense of freedom and adventure, and that's the kind of guy he was. So for all his faults and all his baloney, he gave me a gift, the gift of freedom. And it was an incredible thing. And the idea is that there aren't any limits to what you can do. You just do it. I mean, he was a man who had no education, no money, but he still did everything he wanted to do. And that's the lesson I learned.
So I imagine you, with your novelistic consciousness, hearing this story of his life and going...
Yeah, but also I didn't know anything about the United States. And this seemed to me like a very California story, the story of a time. The things that he had lived represented in my mind so much what had happened in the country during the time of the Vietnam War, the civil rights, the gay movement. All the things that happened in Willie's life were very, very like cliches almost for me as a foreigner. So I was fascinated. And I was fascinated with the place, with California also.
And you live in Northern California together, and you have sort of recreated a Chilean country home.
Well, that's Isabel.
No, but he built the house. We have put together a family with people who are not even blood related. But we feel that we are a little tribe. And then at one point, Willie was obsessed with building a house that would look like his idea of the House of the Spirits. And so he built a house on top of a hill that looks very Spanish or Chilena from the countryside. And it's been like a place where we all gather. It's like the center of this little tribe.
And your life is, in effect, seasonal. Winter you spend writing from January until the summer you spend writing. And then it's, you know, the tribe.
And then it's the extroverted time.
Uh-huh.
When we have the tribe and we have to travel and do all the promotion of the books and all that. But it's a very interesting life. We can't complain, and we are still healthy. We are old, but healthy.
No, you're not old.
Older.
He always says, every morning he says to me, we are falling apart together. And I said, no, you are falling apart. I'm growing old.
Believe me, we're falling apart together.
Well, what are the challenges of working together and maintaining a relationship?
Actually, we don't work together, and I'm a hack.
Parallel.
I grew up with Earl Stanley Gardner and Ellery Queen and Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett. I'm a mystery writer, and she helped me get to that place, and that my mind works that way, and I'm a lawyer, and so I'm always
trying to put pieces together.
And she talks about the big saga, as I was telling somebody last night. She talks about the big saga, and I take the minutia, the little guy, and out of that, if there's anything universal, it comes out of the littleness of people. And she does this big, expansive thing. So we don't compete. I tell everybody who wants to know, I say, I'm just a flea on the elephant's ass. And then
Excuse
they get
me.
Angry, and then I say, well, okay, I'm a fly on this queen's skirt.
So that sounds better.
Yes, it certainly does.
So it's not a matter of competition, and we just work so differently. And I get my inspiration. We probably get our inspiration from the same place. You get it from a newspaper. You're looking for something, and the universe conspires, and it drops it in your lap. But that happens to every writer.
So you really work with the mysteries genre,
yeah.
And you work with the cosmic mystery.
Exactly.
Because you say in your room, in your books, there's always room for the unknown. There's always room for mystery, the grand
but,
mystery.
But the daily routine is interesting because it's a dance in which we are together without stepping on each other's toes. I never have the feeling that he's on my face. I don't know if I'm on your face. But we just dance around each other with the dog in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And it works wonderful.
In your early relationship, you had mentioned you had faxed him a contract.
Yeah.
Dare you tell us a little about that?
Well, when we met and I had to finish the tour, and he told me that we had no commitment, I went home and my son said that, why don't you just go and spend some time with him and take him out of your system and go on with your life? And I thought it was a very good idea, and I had a fax. There were no cellulars at the time, and so, or no emails or any of that kind of stuff. So I faxed him a sort of contract with the kind of stuff that I wanted from a relationship in a column, and a much shorter column with a few things I was willing to give. And he thought it was very funny. I'm being a lawyer. He signed it and sent it back. Big mistake.
But there was also, listen, I also wrote her a letter in my hand on the yellow pad and saying that I had been waiting for her for 50 years. But I didn't know what that meant other than the fact that I had been waiting for her for 50 years. And now I wanted to find out what's going to happen because who knows what's going to happen? You never know. But so it wasn't exactly like I was just, you know, making a joke out of it. I was serious, but it was an unknown area.
But the recognition you had in from who she was in writing of Love and Shadows, that was like your magnetic needle turned north and said, this is it.
Absolutely.
But you know, something really interesting happened at the beginning of our relationship. Will is a man that has been very wounded in his life. He lost his father when he was 6. And from that moment on, he was alone. He had to take care of himself from age 6 on. And he had bad relationships, bad marriages, partners that betrayed him, women that didn't work, and children that were a mess. So he had been very wounded and very betrayed. And so when we got together, one of the very first things that I said is, look, I'm never going to harm you on purpose. If it happens, it's because I make a mistake. And your back is covered. So all your fights are out there, not with me, because I'm in the back covering your back. And he believed me. In spite of all the stuff that had happened in his life, he did believe me. And I really meant it. And I think that changed his attitude with me, and he sort of surrendered to take the risk and just see if it would work. But without that surrendering, it would have never worked.
How hard was it for you to surrender?
It was hard. I mean, you know.
Was the little voice saying, it'll happen again?
I was 50 years old, and, you know, I've been through the mess she's just talked about. So, but it's been, that's happened both to both of us. You go along and you come to a an obstacle that's in the, it's like the door jamb, and you say, I have to get over this. And then you take a chance and you say, okay, I'll step into this next room and let's see what happens. And so you go through a series of passages where you get to the door jamb and then you sort of...
But in all love relationships, there has to be history. I think that I was in a hurry. I wanted passion. I wanted love. I wanted marriage. I wanted everything immediately. And Willie was very cautious. And he always said from the very beginning, just wait, let's see how it happens. We need history. And it is true. You need to look back and say, wow, we've been together all these years and we have overcome all these obstacles somehow. So you gain strength, you know, muscle for the relationship.
You have created this tribe of people around you, your extended family. And as I read your memoirs, I see how important family is to you. That you have your series of letters to your mother, hundreds and hundreds of letters. The House of the Spirits was started as a letter to your grandfather. So how are you chronicling these ongoing, as you create your history, how are you chronicling it past the memoirs? Do you keep journals?
The letter to my mother every day. So I write to her every day what has happened in the day. And in a way, I know that it is not lost. Someday, it will be back in the closet. And if I need to write in 10 years what has happened, I will go to those packages of letters and go through the events and remember the feelings of the moment, which is so important because in time, we may remember what happened. We don't remember what we felt, really. And we change it in our minds also. So the letter, the daily letter is really important for me. When my mother, who is 88, dies, I don't know what I'm going to do. I need to find another person to write a letter every day to.
Well, in the sum of our days, you were still writing to Paula, your daughter.
Yeah.
So I think you'll be able to
continue
that wonderful, fluid process. And you, really.
Well, I don't think I would have been able to write if I hadn't met Isabel and learned from her several technical things about writing, and then about family. Mm-hmm. Because if you ever do read any of my books, you'll see that there's a family created by the characters, and I didn't understand that before our relationship, and so I felt very isolated and very alone, and all my searching was by a lonely character sort of walking in a wasteland. And this idea of family and connection to community and everything made it possible for me to put everything together.
Well, we thank you. We've run out of time
you.
For bringing your family to us in Santa Fe.
Thank you very much, Irina.
I want to just show some of your books. Alas, I didn't have time to find yours. But Isabel of Love and Shadows.
They made a movie, by the way, so don't read the book. Watch the movie.
They also made a wonderful movie of
The House of the
Spirits.
Yes.
And her most recent book, The Sum of Our Days. And Willie, your books, The Chinese Jar, The King of the Bottom.
And The Ugly Dwarf.
But they are not in English, unfortunately.
Oh, they will be.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yes. So I want to thank you. Our guests today are Willie Gordon, thank you, and his wonderful wife, Isabella.
Thank you.